Well, there's a lot of people who have ice skates instead of tires on their cars. It's really wonderful to see all of you. I wonder if you could turn, are you able to turn that so I can see the Zoomers? Hello, people on Zoom. It's lovely to see you. Welcome. Welcome to Clouds and Water. I want to start this talk by expanding on the land acknowledgement that Tom read. What we're witnessing in Eastern Europe, in Ukraine, that has so aggrieved all of us and continues to aggrieve us, is 21st century land theft. It is different in specifics, but not in kind, from what our native relatives suffered, and that allows us to be on this land today. And I think all of us are acutely aware of the generational harm that's being done in Ukraine and the generational harm that was done in this country in centuries past. Let's get off this karma train. Let's get off this karma train of dividing the world up, dividing our hearts up and our sangha and our communities and our neighborhoods and the world. So I want to dedicate this talk to the Ukrainian people, and in dedicating it to them, I dedicate it to all victims of land theft, particularly our Native relatives and African American relatives on whose land we sit. In witnessing the atrocious suffering that land theft brings, may we dedicate ourselves to transforming greed, hate, and delusion. May we not turn away from suffering, but be moved by it, to strengthen our resolve to awaken. May we live the truth of interdependence boldly with love and compassion. I'm going to recite a short, very short prayer once and invite you to join me in repeating it. Do away with illness. Do away with illness. Do away with the great illness of the ignorance of our true nature.
Do
Do away
away
with
with the
illness.
illness.
Do
Do
away
away
with
with
illness.
illness.
Do
Do
away
away
with
with
the
the
great
great
illness
illness
of
of
the
the
ignorance
ignorance
of
of
our
our
true
true
nature.
nature.
Let's say it one more time. Do
Do
away
away
with
with illness.
illness. Do
Do
away
away
with
with
illness.
illness.
Do
Do
away
away
with the
with the great
great
illness
illness of
of
the
the
ignorance of
ignorance of
our
our
true
true
nature.
nature.
So, some of you might have read in Sangha News that I have decided to leave Clouds and Water. As I wrote in the Sangha News, I've been on leave from the teacher reel since December because I felt deeply tired, and because I felt in need of a lot of time and space to reflect on my path. That exploration has been incredibly rich, sometimes painful, but extremely beneficial. And one of the conclusions I came to is that it is just time for me to step away from institutional Zen. It's not actually just institutional Zen. I've been in leadership positions in different institutions for many years, before ordination and after. And I am simply not able to serve in that capacity anymore. I'm not going anywhere else in terms of becoming affiliated with another Zen center. I'm just tired of being institutionalized. So that's not an option. There's a long tradition in Zen practice of itinerancy, wandering. And we have a word for it even, unsui, which means clouds and water monk. So I'm leaving clouds in water to be a clouds and water monk. Last week, I heard the rumor that I'm going off to become a Catholic nun. And I was really tempted to mess with your heads and neither confirm nor deny that rumor. But I have taken a vow to not deceive others, and so I will deny it. It is not true. However, I think I do know where that rumor came from. Not the person. That doesn't matter. But I have shared with some people that at one time in my life, I was headed to a Catholic women's religious order. It was my heart's desire, in fact, to serve in that way as a Dominican nun. This was in the early 1980s, which was a very different world than ours. And after a long and rigorous process of, I was accepted into the order. But after that happened, institutional homophobia reared its ugly head. And I was unable to continue on that path because of it. That was decades ago. But it is only in recent months that I've realized there is still a part of my heart that is hardened because of that experience. In fact, it was in Rahatsu Session, the middle of Rahatsu Session, after there's been time to really settle in and stop whining and really move into samadhi. It was during that time that it became clear to me that this part of my heart had become hardened and that I was suffering because of it. Thich Nhat Hanh, I learned, requires those who aspire to ordain with him to befriend and reconcile with the religion of their origin. Their original origin, original religion. I didn't know that before I started this piece of my journey, but I see how wise it is to do. And so these days I am revisiting Christian scripture, the Christian mystics that first aroused bodhicitta in me, right? The resolve to awaken, the aspiration to live a life grounded in spirituality and service. And I realized I had cut myself off from those sources of wisdom. So in revisiting them now, I'm able to let myself be moved rather than be cynical. I did not make this decision to leave clouds lightly. It's not until much later in my talk that I'm supposed to cry. You know, when a priest is ordained, we take home leaving vows. And leaving clouds feels like another home leaving for me. It is another home leaving. With all the emotions connected with leaving home, excitement, sorrow, a little bit of trepidation, a little bit of second guessing, possibility and ending. In some ways, I feel like I have been pregnant with a question that has been gestating for months. What is my path? What is my path? You know that question, each of you. It's the question that comes up for us when our child is belligerent, or in the moment when we learn of the death of a loved one, or when we have big questions about the direction of our life. That's always our question. Answering this question for me has required a lot of excavation, of clearing away. And the first thing that had to be cleared away and hauled out was what I think my path should be. Who do I think I am? And who do I think others think I am? And what do I need to do to fulfill who I think I am and who others think I am? And then we go into the rabbit hole of the first noble truth of suffering. What is my life? What is this carefully constructed set of preferences and views and requirements and loves and hates that I call my life? Can I set her aside long enough to hear Bodhisattva True Heart Mind? That's the name that I give my inner voice of wisdom. I can hear her when I'm quiet enough and still enough and brave enough. My companion on this project of excavation has been a koan. It's case 3 in the Book of Serenity, which I like to call the Book of Insanity. Because it absolutely, every word in there defies rational, linear thought, as koans are meant to do. The title of this koan is The Invitation of the Patriarch to Eastern India. And for the life of me, I still don't know what that title means, much less the koan. It sounds fairly obvious, but when you get into the koan, you wonder, why is it called this? This is a very long koan. It's the one that my teacher gave to me about 4 years ago when I became Shuso. I don't know why she gave me such a long, rambling, incoherent, disjointed mess of a koan. Maybe it's because it repeats over and over what it's about in all kinds of different scenarios. So maybe she reserves it for her really thickest students who need to be hit over the head with the truth. Never, ever think that you work on a koan, because the truth is the koan works on you. And ever since I began studying this koan 4 years ago, it has shown up in my life periodically and demanded attention. It's like a cat. It sprawls itself across the keyboard when you're doing something else. You can pick her up and set her down, put her on the floor, scold her, make her go away, but she comes back until you give her the attention that she demands. So it has been with this koan, which sprawled out on my keyboard not too long ago. When I took the time to give it attention, it didn't take me long to be stopped in my tracks. Being stopped in our tracks, stymied, mystified, and bewildered is exactly what we don't like about koans. And it's exactly what they are meant to do. because it's in that moment of stopping that Bodhisattva true heart mind can be heard. So this time it was the introduction that stopped me. I didn't have to read very long. The introduction goes, the state before the beginning of time. A turtle heads for the fire. The one phrase specially transmitted outside of doctrine. The lip of a mortar bears flowers. Now tell me, is there any reading and reciting, accepting and upholding in this? I was told that everything you need to know about a koan in the Book of Serenity is contained in the introduction. That is both the good news and the bad news. Specifically, it was the first sentence that drew me in. The state before the beginning of time. The turtle heads for the fire. What is that? What does it mean? What does it have to do with me? I always have a visceral reaction to that image of the turtle heading for the fire. It's like, no, no, don't do it. Don't do it. But we can't understand what that image is without reading the sentence in its entirety. The first part of that sentence is the state before the beginning of time. Dash, a turtle heads for the fire. It's all one. The state before the beginning of time. The moment before, the micro mini moment before the self roars to life, before the constructed world appears. The moment before all of our opinions and views and requirements and imperatives and loves and hates take hold. The state before the beginning of time is a moment of utterly clear spaciousness, vastness that we are. Turtle is a symbol of oceanic consciousness, comfortable and at home in the depths. Fluid, ever-changing, vast, oceanic consciousness. That's the turtle's home, and no fire can destroy it. No fire can destroy it. It's the wide open spaciousness of Zazen, both seated on the cushion and off the cushion when we are simply and deeply mindful during the day. It's a moment when we muster all the love and compassion we can to set aside the incessant demands of the self so that we can be vast, so that we can know we are vast. We can ride on the back of that turtle and be comfortable and trusting and curious about the fire instead of terrified and wary. There's a lot in this koan about the art of questioning and waiting for clarity, about learning to hold tension creatively, not conjuring answers, but waiting for answers to appear. There's also a lot in the koan about how to read scriptures. What are we upholding and accepting? What are we reading and reciting? Spoiler alert. The sutras and scriptures that the koan counsels us to read are our very own lives. One of the very stirring phrases in this koan is, the world, the whole earth is the student's volume of scripture. The whole world is the student's eye. With this eye, read this scripture for countless eons without interruption. I say, it is not easy. That is just masterful understatement, isn't it? It is not easy to read the world, to read our lives. But that is the practice. What's the practice? I bow to this koan for its companionship, for its sometimes too faithful companionship, and I hope it leaves me alone for a while. So I want to reflect on a couple of things that I have learned during my time at Clouds and Water. Number one. Number one is what an honor it is to be a teacher. What an honor it is to be a teacher. I received Dharma transmission almost 2 years ago now, at which point I was authorized to take students and teach. When you receive Dharma transmission, you've supposedly ended your training, but no. When you take students, you begin your training all over again. To accompany students on their spiritual journeys, in the intimacy of Dokusan, is to be graced over and over and over again. And this is true not just for students I have met in the Dokusan room. It's true for all of you. It's true for everybody who walks through those doors out there. It's quite amazing, really. No one is required to come here. No one's required to practice Zen Buddhism. No one is forcing anyone to sit Sesshin or Zazen or to go through Jukai or to struggle with the teachings. There's a hunger for authentic spiritual life here at Clouds and Water and a purity of heart about the pursuit of it, that's a constant inspiration to me and a constant challenge. And as I sit here today, I think, what the hell are you doing leaving? It's part of my ongoing koan. I am so grateful. I'm so grateful to you, my teachers. I see that purity of heart among my fellow teachers as well. Mio-on, face-to-face, So-san, Kikan, Tyson, Kathleen. Dear God, I don't want to forget anybody, but I will. I'm sorry if I've forgotten any names. Kyoku.
Mioshin.
Thank you, Mioshin. Purity of heart. Doesn't mean we don't mess up. Of course we mess up. But you know, messing up is so overrated. The importance of it is so overrated. What's important is to come back to our original intention. To my students, I hope that you have gained as much from our time together as I have gained from you. You are in my heart, always. Number two, I want to say a little bit about leadership. I was executive director here for just shy of 2 years, from December 2019 to September 2021. It's surreal to think back to it, but our doors were locked for most of that time. Locked because of the pandemic. I look back on that in astonishment. that a place dedicated to awakening the heart of great wisdom and compassion had to lock its doors. That's what was required, right? What astonishes me even more, though, was the way that the Sangha continued to show up. The board. Mr. HVAC is here today. Steve Puchinski, who served so well on the board. I thank you for your time on the board, Steve. Raul, thank you. Thank you. Kept showing up. Temple officers showed up. You showed up. The staff showed up. Strangers showed up. It speaks to how much people care about this place. Don't take it for granted. Leaders, don't take members for granted. Members, don't take leaders for granted. Support their work. Ask questions. Find out what's going on. If information isn't available to you about what's going on, ask questions about why not. It indicates you're as invested as they are in the well-being of this place. Find out how you can support the work of the board and the staff. Many people can give money. Many people can't. Give your attention in whatever form that comes. I have a regret from my time as executive director that I want to mention. I have several, actually, but the only one I want to mention today was that I was not always as welcoming as I would like to have been. And a great example of that was one day, it was before we closed down for the pandemic. It was in January of 2020. I was working here on a Monday, I think. And the doorbell rang. And I went to answer it. And there were two young guys standing there. One was dressed in a rather ostentatious white fur coat and hat. And he was impeccably made up. And his friend was dressed, I think, as like a court jester. And I opened the door to greet them, and they were absolutely charming and roaring drunk. This was 9 a.m. Okay. And and I said, "Can I help you?" And they said, "We're here for meditation." And I said, we have meditation on Sundays. Is that what you're here for? Yeah. Yeah, that's what we're here for. And I said, well, it's not Sunday. And they looked at each other and said, oh my God, we lost track of the day. We've been out partying and we lost track of the days. And I encouraged them to come back next week. And why didn't I invite them in? It's like, come in and meditate. Let's meditate. I'm happy to have you. I regret that. I was so involved in what I was doing that was so apparently so important. I had to get back to it. I hope they do come back. Anyway, I regret that, and I want to share that with this community. I also want to apologize for any ways that I have offended anybody, hurt people, fallen short. That's what we learn in Sangha. We learn the ways we fall short. The third and final thing I want to mention is related to my own falling short and not being always as welcoming as I would have liked. I'd like to nudge the Sangha, leaders and followers alike, to consider how Clouds might become a more welcoming community. And by saying that, I am not saying that this is not a welcoming community. It is. It is. But Flying Fish, for those of you who don't know Fish, she was a wonderful teacher who was here for many years and moved to Portland, Oregon with her family. Fish used to talk about radical hospitality. That was her practice. The last year that she served at Clouds and Water, radical hospitality, unconditional welcoming. And I used to listen to that and think of all the ways that I could expand, you know, my hospitality muscle. How can I continually do that? And that's the kind of radical hospitality I'm talking about. I guess it was William Shakespeare who said, a person's greatest strength begets their greatest weakness. This is the person who is an outstanding listener, who continues to listen when really what she needs to do is speak up. Or this is the person with a sparkling sense of humor who continually tells jokes that aren't funny. Institutions fall into this as well. To use a really obvious example, this is the military that builds up a very impressive defensive arsenal and then uses it to wage war. Or the church that grasps its own convictions so deeply that it goes into an inquisition to root out heretics. Those are two huge examples, obvious examples. One of Clouds and Water's shining strengths, I think, is its commitment to diversity. I see this most clearly in its commitment to racial diversity. However far Clouds still has to go in this regard, what it's doing now goes well beyond the lip service that institutions usually pay to diversity. I want to read the core vision that guides this statement. If you're not familiar with the core vision and values, it's on the website under the About pull-down menu. It's quite inspiring. We value the great diversity of our culture, including race, ethnicity, sexual orientation, gender identity, age, creed, religious background, ability, income, family status, and level of practice. We intend that there be no exclusion from our community or its training opportunities on the basis of arbitrary cultural factors. When it becomes apparent that there is an issue, we will address it. This is a stirring statement, all the more so because of the blood, sweat, and tears and financial resources that have been put into making it alive. And in my view, it's incomplete. It needs to be expanded to include political orientation as one of the diverse cultural factors that Clouds values. It's a cliche to say this, but it's nonetheless true that we live in a time when political differences are ripping us apart. Othering on the basis of political persuasions and worldview is rampant in our culture. This is by design, by some who thrive on division as a source of power, but and as a community grounded in the Buddha Dharma, we know the harm that results from othering. It gives rise to violence. Violence in speech and violence in action. And yet, because we're so much a part of this culture, we're vulnerable to othering. And so I'm going to close this talk with a koan that I'd like to leave to you, the Sangha. How can we live our deeply held convictions without othering those who don't hold them? How can we make sure that our convictions are a source of strength and not weakness? Awakening the great heart of wisdom and compassion requires huge generosity. And I know that it's something the Sangha is capable of. I'm going to end my talk with a poem from Thich Nhat Hanh that addresses this, that addresses interbeing and othering. He writes, it's called Call Me by My True Names. Don't say that I will depart tomorrow. Even today, I am still arriving. Look deeply. Every second I am arriving to be a bud on a spring branch, to be a tiny bird with still fragile wings, learning to sing in my new nest, to be a caterpillar in the heart of a flower, to be a jewel hiding itself in a stone. I still arrive in order to laugh and to cry, to fear and to hope. The rhythm of my heart is the birth and death of all that is alive. I am the mayfly metamorphosing on the surface of the river, and I am the bird that swoops down to swallow the mayfly. I am the frog swimming happily in the pond, and I am the grass snake that silently feeds itself on the frog. I am the child in Uganda, all skin and bones, my legs as thin as bamboo sticks, and I am the arms merchant selling deadly weapons to Uganda. I am the 12-year-old girl refugee on a small boat who throws herself into the ocean after being raped by a sea pirate. And I am the pirate, my heart not yet capable of seeing and loving. I am a member of the Politburo and with plenty of power in my hands. And I am the man who has to pay his debt of blood to my people, dying slowly in a forced labor camp. My joy is like spring, so warm it makes flowers bloom all over the earth. My pain is like the river of tears, so vast it fills the four oceans. Please call me by my true names, so I can hear all my cries and my laughter at once. So I can see that my joy and pain are one. Please call me by my true names, so I can wake up, and so the door of my heart can be left open, the door of compassion. Thank you for your tremendous kindness today and always. Thank you.